Hi, everybody. May is Older Americans Month. And so that means it's time for a rant. I mean, commentary about ageism and language. Now, y'all, that gonna be okay, sugar? Dearie, you okay if I continue? Our language about and to those of us who are aging in America is, in a word, harmful. When we regard, we often disregard. We label, we categorize, we assume. Myths and stereotypes are perpetuated because of all this. Our words and actions become lessons to those around us. Today, I'm going to talk about just a sliver of a bigger problem. Let's look at language. Conversational language, to be exact. How we talk about, talk with, or to older adults is important. Language can hold veiled ageism. I have a relative who is currently in rehab. Her commentary, nearing complaint, is of witnessing and being the unwilling recipient of ageism and ageist remarks and lack of regard. She got called sweetie, and it was the lead domino for our lively text exchange about her encounters with ageism. We're texting and acknowledging and discussing intent. Intent is the first consideration. The caring and good intent can often be in place. Delivery, the how, connotes the intent. It's either with care or concern or with disdain or arrogance or simply innocent ignorance of how the message may change as it travels from the sender to the receiver. You see, my relative and I both live in the South and have long heard many terms meaning endearment, like dear or dearie, honey, shug, sweetie, and lots more. We've heard ones that do convey caring and concern. I'll bet I couldn't go a day around here without hearing or being addressed as darling, shug, young lady, and I'm 66, and more. It may be a cultural or a regional norm, but that doesn't make it right. And it doesn't make it right for a society that's changing. Most times the persons delivering mean no disrespect or ill intent. In fact, quite the opposite is often true. In my experience, it's an extra addition meant to call attention to the sender's regard for me or extra treatment of the receiver, like they're making way for me, especially when they hold the door for me. I'll say thank you. Then they say, you're welcome, little lady. Now, in that moment, there is dissonance. There's a little confusion right below the surface. I can either ignore it or I can stop and consider how was that remark meant? To be nice? To honor me somehow? To slam me for needing help? Did they assume I needed help? What in this moment, what are these words really all about? You know, recently I myself had some medical care, which included several preoperative appointments and an overnight stay in the hospital. In the hospital, there was this one really nice nurse who called me Sweet Pea more times than I could count. Now, to look at me, in my estimation, I don't think I'm a Sweet Pea. And I imagine that many patients lying in their hospital beds are not feeling so sweet when they're in tip-top shape. But I found myself accepting of these terms. But now I'm wondering, was I complicit? I accepted it because I felt the intention was of caring and concern, and to a degree respectful. I most certainly would have picked up on it if I were being dismissed or somehow categorized or glossed over. I would have recognized if the delivery was reinforcing that somehow the sender had power and that I lacked it. I made the decision at the time not to comment or protest. I guess I leaned in on what I gathered to be good intent. But inside, I'm noticing and probably thinking, you know, I won't call you Susie Q if you don't call me Sweet Pea. Perhaps I should have said something. I should have figured out a way to simply and properly provide feedback to the whole Sweet Pea delivery team there. But that would have been my constantly having to monitor their utterances and waging a feedback campaign that really would result in little permanent change or change in somebody's work behavior. It was a bigger problem than anything I or my relative can change from a hospital bed. However, in our text with my relative, I began to volley about this intent versus delivery thing. We agreed that even if intent were good, that somehow this language, these words, must stop. There's a lot coming to light in the media about ageism today, and yes, it's systematic. Therefore, it's going to require a cultural change, a systems change, training. There's some things that individuals like myself and my relative can do. Language is just but one facet of a larger issue of ageism. How big and how invasive is this problem? And we do have a real problem with ageism in the United States. Ageism refers to stereotypes, how we think, and prejudice, how we feel, and discrimination, how we act, towards people on the basis of their age. Age is one of the first things that we notice about other people. Actual ageism arises when age is used to categorize or divide in ways that may lead to harm or erode our uniformity across generations. As a society, it seems that we rely heavily on assumptions. A national poll on healthy aging by the University of Michigan showed that almost half of adults reported experiencing ageism during personal interactions with others, who are assuming, because of their age, that they have difficulty using technology. That was 22%. That older adults have difficulty hearing or seeing, 17%, or remembering or understanding, 17%. 15% of adults easily reported that others assume that they don't do anything valuable or important. So reinforcing ageism is not harmless. Older adults who continually experience ageism start to internalize those feelings of worthlessness, and that can lead to anxiety or depression or poor health. Another kind of harm comes from witnessing and deciding to adopt the behavior. For example, if a newer staff person is observing or shadowing the more seasoned one and hears words like shug and sweet pea used to address older customers or patients or clientele, then what kind of behavior and communication standard does this set? What will more than likely be adopted? It seems probable that instances without protest will lead to adoption as learning. This will extend the assumed validity. This will extend ageism. I thought about my role models, parents, teachers, supervisors, public figures, all sending and all receiving all the time and over time. I thought about reactions. You know, my dad took it. Let me tell you about his frequent drive-through experience. He'd frequently drive through Wendy's to get a Frosty, and it was offered by the lady at the window, who began to recognize him because of his frequent flying. And she'd lean out the window and hand over his Frosty and say, Here you go, sweetie. Now, perhaps Dad was from a generation who didn't see or question that terminology, because he definitely had been imprinted and accepted it. Either way, it was either that or he acquiesced because he recognized the words and the delivery as with good intent. He felt no threat. But later on, he perpetuated it by making light of it. In fact, he often retold the story in an animated fashion of his gal. His gal. Now, there's a problem right there, Dad. At Wendy's, handing over his Frosty and often saying, "Here you go, sweetie." He described the Wendy's worker as an older lady with gobs of lipstick, and he would purse his lips as he would repeat, "Sweetie." But as we've established here, much of the threat inside ageism and language is veiled. All of those present at that lone drive-through, on or before my dad, in the course of even one day, how many people were affected or imprinted? Or how often was the behavior reinforced in that day? No matter how long we've witnessed or acquiesced or participated in this kind of thinking and behavior, maybe now we feel it's no longer suitable. How then do we change? What can I or another person do to interrupt this pattern, to stand up for ourselves or another? Here are some actionable steps for your consideration. First, you can recognize it. To create awareness requires an understanding that there's a problem. In other words, you can't change something if you don't know that it needs changing in ourselves or in others. You know, we may see it first in others, I expect, and then we'll have to do a little self-checking. The second thing that we can do is speak up. If you hear something ageist, consider pointing that out in a calm and respectful manner. I could have at least said from my hospital bed, "Oh, please call me Nancy," without starting the grand debate right then and there. Three, ask yourself, would I like it? Treat older people with the respect that you want. Think about whether you're being patronizing or talking to them like a child. I hear this all the time in healthcare and my patient advocacy, the patronizing reference to somebody you don't know as honey or dear, or an older patient in a healthcare facility who gets the we treatment. "We are going to get dressed now." Have you ever witnessed somebody noticeably increase their volume as they address or talk with an older person who probably was hearing just fine? The fourth thing, we can be inclusive ourselves. We can operate across all generations in our thinking and in our activities, the ones we attend, and in the ones maybe that we get to direct or plan or create. Foster real talk opportunities, honest exchanges that will likely minimize the chance or the need for labeling or division. And if you're an employer, you can put out a zero tolerance policy behind it. You know, in this age of employees evaluating and questioning policy, it can very well serve as an educational moment. I'm just saying. Fifth, give yourself a break. Now, you know, if you're thinking that some behavior or language choices that you thought were respectful could really be ageist, now you're enlightened and you can make the choice to speak or behave differently in the future. Sixth, help bang the drum. You know, I may be shifting one person's paradigm at a time, but I do have the opportunity to accomplish this several times a week. I meet enough folks, and I'm in a position to be vocal. I can accomplish number two, the speak up one, in a one-to-one exchange. But I can also write a blog or create a video to further my notion, and I can post it online regarding my experiences, giving others the opportunity to consider or follow suit if they so choose. Older Americans Month is a great time for all of us to honor our older adults by standing against ageism. Ageism's not going to go away by itself. Misuse of language is just but one portion of ageism, but it affects all ages, not just older adults. By understanding that intent is one thing and delivery is another, we can also understand that both intent and delivery hold choices. We can understand that ageism is veiled but recognizable, and what comes next are choices still. In the instances of witnessing, acquiescing, adopting, or perpetuating. As I wrote this, another thought or query came to mind, just popped in my head. What side of history do you want to be on, Nancy? I want to be on the side of open-mindedness, action, and change. And in our increasingly global society, we can have influence on what remains or what becomes a norm or what's considered politically correct. And this one's for me. I don't have to be complicit or ignore a behavior simply because of my geographic location. As for my relative, she's hoping to receive a patient satisfaction survey to use as her vehicle toward change. For her to get one will be to unleash her sword, which is the written word for her. She's formidable. Now, if you call me sweetie, well, you'll get a reaction from this lady. You might not hear it or see it. She may choose her battles in the moment, but she can help wage a bigger war. I hope something that I've said today provokes thought and maybe action if you decide that that is needed. In May, this Older Americans Month, let's pay some attention to ageism and language. If ever I may assist you or someone you know, I hope that you'll get in touch with me. Thanks, everybody.